Freedom isn't free, but the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast certainly is. The Medicare podcast that always sports a Windsor knot in its tie. And now, a spaced-out space cadet Medicare expert, Doug Jones.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. We're sneaking up on episode 250, but it's going to take another week or so before we get there. This is Doug Jones, your Medicare expert, as you just heard my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, announce to you. We are here to talk about Medicare and how one might make the transition from Obamacare to Medicare, from youth and vigor to old age. And I don't want to use any negative connotations here, because I am one of those who has crossed over that line years ago. And to tell you the truth, once you know what you're doing, it's not that big a deal. It's nothing to be afraid of. It's possible to follow all the rules and not jeopardize your coverage. And it's possible to come out on the other side smelling like a rose. One of the ways to do that is to get your copy of Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever. And you can do that by going to Barnes & Noble or to Amazon. And if you go to Amazon, you get your choice of the paperback version, the Kindle ebook version, or the Audible version, so you can just listen to it. In any event, those things are all reasonably priced. And from the reviews that they've garnered, they are worthwhile tools to guide your passage from youthful under 65 health insurance to Medicare health insurance at age 65 and over. So I hardly recommend those. Also, we've got a terrific website, MedicareForTheLazyMan.com, that my partner Randy managed to build. I had the idea. He went out and built it. And a lot of people go there and send me a questionnaire. And they say, hey, what would it cost to get the coverages that you propose in my area? Here's my age, here's my sex, here's my smoking status, here's my address, tell me what I should do. And I come back with several alternatives and generally say, well, you know, of these alternatives, here's the one I recommend. For most people, it makes sense. And I help them with the paperwork and everything, and bang, pretty soon they're finished with Medicare. And they rarely ever have to look back. I would say never, except that pesky drug plan, those things can change fairly frequently. So once a year, you might want to look back at that. But as far as everything else goes, it's a done deal. Anyway, I mentioned Randy earlier. I think Randy should join us because he always has something pithy to say. Notice I didn't say pissy. I said pithy.
You got to say that word very carefully, Doug.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's pithy with a TH. I really have to be careful with that. So well, I will.
Especially after oral surgery, I'm still learning how to speak properly. And that's when I have to be careful with words like that.
Yeah, it's really, it's interesting because, well, especially after oral surgery, when your mouth is all still numb,
you can't
eat. Hey, by the way, you know, you're sitting there trying to get lunch afterwards and your wife says, oh, by the way, Doug, all that soda is dribbling down your mouth onto your shirt.
It's unpleasant. Unpleasant. Back when I used to smoke, if I had a marathon dental session, I would say, do you mind if I go out and have a cigarette? You know, this is taking entirely too long. And it's hard to smoke a cigarette when you can't feel your lips.
I don't know. I don't remember doing it a lot. But yeah, that would be pretty tough.
Well, I know why you didn't do it a lot. It's because your cheap ass relatives who were dentists did not give you Novocaine.
They didn't.
They didn't give you any anesthetic at all. So your lips were never numb.
No, well, that's true. They'd say, hey, you know, this shot of Novocaine might cost about, you know, I don't know, 12, 13 cents to the doctor. Oh, yeah. Well, now, what am I going to say, Doug? I'm going to say what I used to hear. Oh, we're just about done.
Yeah, don't worry. It's almost over.
Yeah. As I was, you know, imprinting my nails into their dental chair.
Yeah.
You know, oh my God, I remember that.
But yeah, they didn't have any competition, I guess. Huh? There wasn't another dentist down the street that actually used anesthesia.
Well, they didn't have any competition because they were my uncles. So ultimately, there was no competition because I had nowhere else to go. So that was the size of it. So anyway, that's my dreary story about family dental care.
I'm glad I didn't grow up in Nebraska. Actually, it doesn't matter because I never had a cavity until I was 25 years old. Now, all hell broke loose after that, but 25 years old, I never understood what Novocaine was like or how a cavity was repaired.
Well, I know all of that because I was awake through it every freaking time.
Well, go ahead.
That's why when I discovered nitrous oxide, I was such a fan of that at the dentist office.
My old dentist kept acting like he had some and he had just forgotten to use it. Every appointment I'd say, hey, we're going to use gas. Oh, darn it, I forgot. Next time for sure. Next time for sure. Never did. And I'm not even sure he ever had gas. So the new guy, my old guy retired, new guy, I say, hey, how about some nitrous oxide? Oh, well, if there was a way to sterilize the tubes, then I'd be able to give you nitrous oxide. But we haven't figured out a way that the lawyers will approve of to sterilize the nitrous oxide tubes. And I said, well, where can I buy my own tubes?
I'll bring my own.
Yeah. Oh, that's not going to work, sir. Oh, crap.
Oh, gosh.
I might go to my grave without ever enjoying the benefits of nitrous oxide.
Well, I can tell. I've told you before, but that is some if you're not all that happy about being in a dental chair, it's some amazing stuff, because once you get a snortful of that, you don't care what happens to you.
I pray for that. Because when I go to the dentist's office, I am not a happy camper. I would love to have some harmless little thing that makes me a happy camper when I'm there.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. I'm totally there with you, Doug.
All righty. I've got a surprise for you today. I'm going to do some mailbag items.
Oh, all right. Great.
I knew you would be happy about that.
I love mailbag items.
So I don't know how much time we have left. You just hold your arms up in the universal sign for shut up, Doug, when we run out of time, when the crickets are starting to go.
All right. We've got quite a bit. We've got about 11 minutes.
Oh, okay. Very good. Well, the first item that floated to the surface of the mailbag today is from our old buddy, Steve. Steve is master questioner. For those who haven't been listening too long, Steve is a guy who came up with a question, then came up with another question, then came up with another question. So far, he's asked about maybe 100 questions. And I used to be very suspicious until he became a client of mine. I used to suspect that he was a college student and he was using me to research his thesis content so that he wouldn't actually have to go to the library on campus. But since then, I've gotten to know him as a real good guy who just has a creative, curious mind. And so this time, Steve wrote, just for whatever reason, I was looking up some of the doctors I went to when I was growing up in Florida. He said, I found one still in practice, although he is in his 70s and getting ready to sell the practice. I noticed that he accepted about 5 Medicare Advantage plans, but no Medicare supplement plans. Is this typical? Is there some rule that if they accept one, they can't accept the other? I tried searching on this and couldn't find much. Thanks. And so I responded to Steve. What I have always been told is that there is no need to list Medicare supplement plans that a doctor accepts. If they accept Medicare payment, then they accept supplements. All supplements. To accept an Advantage plan, a doctor has to proactively enroll by signing a contract that binds him to certain rules and actions when dealing with patients who present the ID card from that particular plan. And the reason I read this, it seems like a simple concept, but I had a client tell me that she went to her doctor to ask if the plan I proposed for her was covered. And the doctor's staff gave the wrong answer. They said no. It's from a certain insurance company. Let's say it's from Humana. Well, the doctor's staff was thinking that the plan I proposed was a Medicare Advantage plan. And they said, no, we don't take, or we're not members of that particular Advantage plan network. And so, no, that's no good in our office. Well, the woman asked the wrong question. She should have said, I've got Medicare with a Medicare supplement. Is that going to be a problem? You take Medicare patients and, of course, Medicare supplements of all stripes. And the answer would have been, yes, we do. That's just fine. But when this woman asked if you take Humana to the doctor's staff, their answer was, no, we don't, because we're not members of the Humana network. Because as you know, Medicare Advantage plans operate on limited numbers of providers, and they have to proactively join a network in order for a Medicare Advantage member to be able to see that doctor. They can't go out of network. Well, they can go out of network if the plan is a PPO. Those are kind of rare, but if the plan is a PPO, the member that's covered by that plan can go out of network, but they're going to wind up paying almost the entire cost out of their pocket. So what's the point of having that kind of insurance if you're not going to get the benefit of a doctor's bill being paid for you? So enough about that, but just you have to be careful. If you're going to ask your doctor about a certain plan, you've got to phrase the question so that the staff can understand. But be aware that any doctor that takes Medicare is also going to accept payment from a Medicare supplement. So then we have Rebecca. Rebecca wrote in and she said, I will still be working and have something Blue Cross Blue Shield, the Shield plan. However, I could have my employer apply for a small employer exemption so that Medicare is primary. Now, typically, ladies and gentlemen, the size of the company that you work for determines whether Medicare is primary or secondary for those 65 and older employees. If the company is over 20 employees, then Medicare is always secondary and the employer's plan is always primary. If the company is smaller, fewer than 20 employees, then the employer's plan is secondary and Medicare is primary. So if you work for a real tiny company, you have to, when you turn 65, enroll in Medicare Parts A and Part B. So the employer's plan would then cover any gaps in those plans, those coverages. So anyway, this woman goes on to say, I'm trying to figure out whether I should apply for Part B and also whether I should purchase a supplement plan that is a supplement plan right now. Going fully on Medicare may be better for my employer and for me, but I'm really not sure. I'm hoping to wait to retire until I'm 70 or 72. And I said, thanks for making contact. I cannot make the decision about which course of action is best for you and or your employer. What I can do is give you the best case cost projections if you were to enroll fully in Medicare right now, and then I can answer any questions that might occur to you. You may already know this, but Medicare Part A is likely to be free of charge because you will have worked 10 years of taxable earnings. And then Part B carries a monthly premium of $148.50 this year, that's 2021. The best price on a Medicare supplement will be for the plan I most often recommend, that's high deductible or high value, Plan G, from a company that I trust implicitly. Their monthly premium for a non-smoking woman age 65 in your location would be $28. God, you can't beat that. If cost is no object and you would rather have the more comprehensive, expensive Plan G, I recommend a different company for about $119 a month. Here are the unknowns. The possibility of being hit with an IRMA penalty, I-R-M-A-A, as income-related monthly adjustment amount. If you are in an upper income bracket and the monthly cost of your prescription drug plan would also be affected by an IRMA penalty. The least expensive of all prescription drug plans this year costs about $7.30 a month. I have attached a prescription questionnaire in case you would like me to use the government website to predict the least costly drug plan available to you from the 30 or so premium or plans on the market right now. So this ought to give you an idea of the cost you or your employer would be facing. If the decision is to proceed with Medicare enrollment, I'll be happy to facilitate that enrollment by acting as your agent, if that is the final decision. Again, thank you very much for reaching out. So that woman went to the website, medicareforthelazyman.com, and filled out a questionnaire. And then there's always a place for her remarks. Anybody who goes there and sends me the answers to the questionnaire can always add some remarks about their particular situation. So there is now a woman who writes about Medicare plus MedSup, Medicare supplement, versus Medicare plus a retiree plan. So she writes, "Hi, Doug, I hope you can provide some insight for this somewhat complicated situation. I'm a 64-year-old, currently on my husband's federal employee health plan, which includes vision, dental, and drugs, along with my husband, who is 62 right now." So she's 64, her husband is 62 and works for the federal government, has pretty comprehensive medical coverage, it sounds like. Our adopted daughter, 18 years old, is part of the family too. I am just starting a new full-time job and I intend to work until 70 years old, if all goes according to plan, in order to cover our daughter's college expenses. I have declined my employer's health plan to stay on my husband's employee health plan now and his retiree health plan later. I will turn 65 this coming November 2021. So I am just moving into my initial eligibility period to enroll in Medicare. That eligibility period when you're turning 65 is 3 months before your birth month, the month of your birth, and then 3 months after. So she wrote to me on August 2nd, which was exactly 3 months before her birth month. So I just read your book, Medicare for the Lazy Man, where you strongly recommend that Medicare supplement in addition to Medicare A, B, and D. I intend to enroll in Medicare A and Medicare B, though it's not clear if, to avoid the late enrollment penalty, I should, one, add Medicare Part B this year, or add Medicare Part B when I retire, or add Medicare Part B when my husband retires. In addition, I would like to know which option is better. Number two, continue on my husband's employer health plan instead of adding Medicare supplement and Medicare Part D, or in addition to adding Medicare supplement and Medicare Part D, and some of this doesn't make a lot of sense, drop from my husband's employer's health plan and take Medicare A, B, and D and Medicare supplement as you recommend. Any clarity you can provide will be greatly appreciated. Boy, I remember now how much my head was spinning when I tried to understand that, but she did her best to be careful and to be to lay it all out in an easy to understand fashion. It's my fault that I didn't glom onto her essential meeting right away, but here's my answer. Thank you for writing. Without knowing anything about which of the many federal employee plans you are covered by, my first thought is that it might have a restrictive network of medical providers or a substantial monthly contribution. Either of these elements might make Medicare a more attractive alternative since it has a fairly reasonable cost and no network provider restrictions at all. This might be the first thing to think about. Are you completely satisfied with the cost and the benefits provided by your current plan? If so, if you're happy with what the government is providing your husband as an employee, if you're happy with that, there is no compelling reason for you to consider Medicare at all, as long as your husband is actively at work. I often suggest that people enroll in Medicare Part A when they turn 65 because it's free of charge and it may ease the Part B enrollment later on, should you decide to take that step. However, as long as your husband continues active employment, you are in no danger of any sort of late enrollment penalty. The best answer to your first quandary is 1C, add Part B when your husband retires. The second consideration depends on how satisfied with the cost and benefit of your current coverage. The best answers will be 2 plus 2A if you like your current plan, except that you might want to enroll in cost-free Part A. And then I said number 3 would be a better choice if you can improve on the costs or benefits you currently have. Was that helpful at all? If not, I'll be just as happy to rephrase my thoughts and to keep trying until you have the clarity you seek. Just let me know what else I can do for you. By the way, if you enjoy the book, I got Dominic Regina's gift out and I smacked her upside the head with my bat. I said, if you enjoyed the book, it would be a wonderful thing if you could go back to Amazon and leave a short written review. Thanks for your consideration. Now I got to go back and see what she wrote for number three. Number three choice was drop from her husband's employer health plan and take all the Medicare plans right away. And I did say that that would be especially a good idea if she did not like the cost or benefit structure of the plan that they're covered by. And frankly, by looking at her name, I don't think she actually pulled the trigger on any of those right now, but I think there's always hope for the future. I do enjoy it when people write and ask me for advice and then later decide to become my clients. So, Randy, how are those crickets doing?
Well, we're out of gas.
I'm not surprised to hear that. What's all that other noise going on back there?
Well, that's my printer.
Oh.
Someone in the other room is printing something.
I was afraid it was the Medicare Advantage salesman breaching the wall and pounding on the door.
Breaching the wall of the Carson sanctuary. No, right. I keep them at bay because I have, you know, as you know, I have cameras. I have all kinds of perimeter cameras. I have motion sensors. You just name it. I've got it.
Like a fortress.
I've got three attack dogs.
I've seen those dogs. They nibbled me to death one day. Scared the heck out of me.
They're all miniature poodles for the audience. You know, they wouldn't attack anything other than maybe lick you to death. But obviously, we are out of time, and I just want to remind you to go to Amazon. I don't know if we talked about it earlier, but get your books, get several.
We did talk about it earlier, but I've got to go back to Amazon and get a new mute button, a cough button, so I can cough in glorious silence.
Now, I do have one question. Did your Kindle version pass muster again? Is it for sale?
You know, I'm thinking that it might have been a subject of sabotage because they came back to me and they said, we still have a problem. And it's in the chapter with the various states when I discussed Massachusetts, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. And we have the state seals. I think they were saying that the state seals were a problem. And so I contacted my technical person who did not say, okay, I'll get right on it. This time, I think she got right on it because yesterday and today, I've sold some Kindle books. So I think they're back on sale again.
But oh, cool.
It's like they took them off and didn't bother to tell me. So I didn't sell any for a while. And then I complied with their request, put them back on, and then they took them off again. So I'm wondering if this one of my competitors isn't fooling around with the system.
Oh, they're probably there. I would be willing to bet there's. Oh, look at that! Yeah, he's putting unauthorized state seals on his stuff, making it look like it's authorized by Minnesota, Alabama, and Mississippi.
Amazon would never know that because they only do this stuff when somebody complains. So this means that somebody complained to them. Now, who's going to complain? It's not going to be a person who just turns the page and moves along. It's going to be somebody with an axe to grind.
There's a schmuck in the woodpile.
That's right. And we're going to get him out of there.
That's right. Well, we want, first of all, to thank the audience. We certainly appreciate you spending time with us, as we always do, because it's a lot more fun with an audience than it is without. Isn't it, Doug?
Especially the audience we have. They're a fun bunch of people.
Yes,
in fact,
they are.
I got an email from a woman yesterday who said that she laughed like a hyena and cringed at the same time when I told my story about the brand new grill that the family of mice moved into.
Oh, yes. I remember that story well.
Yep. So I'm glad we're providing some entertainment as well as some Medicare knowledge.
Yeah, I really enjoy doing this for the folks. And we certainly thank them for joining us. I will remind you all once again that Doug, by the way, sells insurance. He's a great author, and he also is authorized to sell insurance in just about every one of the 853 states of the United States.
I can't keep track of how many there are, but I'm licensed in all of them.
I know, and it's awesome. He spends a lot of time and a lot of effort keeping those licenses current. So anyway, thank you. We are going to sign off for right now. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma and the CEO, CIO, and COO, and every other O of MedicareForTheLazyMan.com.
Bye-bye.